Good morning. Today is Monday, July the 16th. Joining us this morning is the bank dude from Redwood Capital, Mr. John Dalby. Good morning, sir. I've had others use your keypads.
Really?
I don't know if you're catching on or if you're just contagious.
So I got to come up with some new material, something fresh?
I think after 5 years, it's probably time. But, you know, people use the same line about the music theme.
Really?
And I say, you know, every 40 years we'll change. So we got another 5 years to go. Our Why Do They Say That this morning is at Also Ran. How did a non-entity come to be called an also-ran? Any idea?
I would tell you, but it's only because I already read it.
Oh, okay.
So that would be cheating and insincere. So I'll let you read the actual comment.
Oh, true to the core. This term comes from the sporting pages of newspapers. In a horse race, those entries which do not finish near the top are listed under the terse heading also-ran. That would probably be out of one place in show. Probably be
that's
like
beyond that.
8, 9, 10. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Before Glue Factory.
Yes, that would be any running race that I would be in.
I never had that ability either. In fact, I was the guy, if he beats you, you're going to do push-ups. This time of the year, new fiscal year for governmental entities. Okay. Or quasi-governmental entities, oftentimes.
Yahoo.
Yeah, maybe even those guys, too. It's certainly a time or a period of change here locally. I think everybody's in agreement on that, that as we kind of had surmised last fall, that legalization wasn't going to be a panacea for our region. There was going to be change. So as we're experiencing the change now, and some folks are in a new fiscal year, how do you do forecasting? Either budgets or projections or anything dealing with the future. Is what do you guys look for from your commercial clients as far as their techniques, their abilities, their resources? What do they look for with this thing?
Okay, so budgets, forecasts, mean different things to different people. So when you say the word forecast, what I look at is, what do I think the future is going to be? Meaning, if I forecast sales, what are my sales? What is the potential out there? Has been a change in the market? Has there been a change in the products? Are there new competitors? you know, is this a product that's run its course, or is
more revenue generation, gross revenue, that
right.
end of
that's
things?
That's a forecast of what's the future going to look like. So, you know, for us in the banking world, we look at, you know, market saturation, deposits on the gain or deposits on the are declining nationwide, countywide. Same thing with loans. What are the demands? What are the competitors? What are, you know, various things that you look at? And then the next thing you're looking at, so you're kind of trying to decide as you forecast forward what your sales going to be. Now, the big question becomes, what are your margins going to be? And that comes from forecasting then, are you going to see expenses go up on your cost of goods sold for materials, labor, et cetera, and what's that percentage going to be? And then based on your forecasts, can you increase your prices accordingly to maintain your margins? And margins generally are the number one driver of profitability. So when you say forecast, now when you say budget to me, now I'm looking at, based on my forecasts, now I want to budget and I want to stretch myself. So a budget is what you want to accomplish. And it's a path towards that. Now, a budget should be driven by a strategic plan.
Not independent of your forecast.
Your forecast is something you look at as you develop your strategic plan. I think the forecast comes first because you want to know what kind of environment you're going into. What is the future going to hold? And you know, your ability to strategic plan and budget accurately and well is really dependent on your ability to forecast what the future looks like.
So let's start with...
I used to use a crystal ball.
Yeah. Well, hey.
Tarot cards,
That's an upgrade from the coin flip. Yeah. So as you are considering someone looking ahead for forecast, can you be as gross in your reference as national, regional, in-state, in-county? I mean,
this block?
The broader you are, obviously, the more information you can have, but the less pertinent it may be. The narrower you get, it kind of gets into that intuition thing rather than and tea leaves and canaries and rather than being able to have independent information.
So both are important because as you have the generic or the larger scope, so national information, there is more information out there. So it gives you some general trends. Now, then you have to ask yourself in every one of those, does that apply to me on the local level? So we have some dynamics here, and you mentioned it before, with cannabis that changes a number of issues for us that are not issues for the rest of the country, or to a different degree, I should say. So as you take a look at national trends, you got to put that in local perspective. On the other hand, there are things that are national that will help you, such as interest rate environment, the commodities if you're using steel, wool, cotton, you know, whatever it is.
Kind of like industry specific.
Exactly. Cement, stuff. Whatever it is that you need, you know, the national trends will be there.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19, and we will be there when we come back.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the Bank Dude. John, looking at some of the trends that are out there that do pertain here. Now, you mentioned commodities. If we had set aside tariffs and just say, okay, we're not going to have too much of the international. We may have some, but you know, let that kind of settle. We don't have too much automotive manufacturing. Okay, set that aside. There are areas certainly where there is influence on what's going on in the international marketplace. Okay. Immigration. I mean, there's a bunch of those big ticket items that we don't have an awful lot of sense of yet because it's so fluid at this point. Okay. Will there be a repercussion? Yeah. What color will it be? Ooh. To what magnitude? Yeah. Yeah. We're back to flipping our coins and our tarot cards. What about some of those national trends, though, that are industry-specific? Automobile sales. Okay, that's pretty specific. You can track that locally because of the DMV registration stuff. What does that mean to the local women's clothing store? Now we start getting into that experience, guesstimation, intuition kinds of things.
Yeah. So tariffs, let's just use tariffs. Tariff, just out and out, increase the cost to the end user because it's all going to be passed on. So
consumer price index would bump, wouldn't
exactly,
it?
Until those certain industries grow, you know, for instance, steel. If we're going to tariff steel, then what you're going to see is you know, and the reason they're doing the tariffs is so we start seeing more production inside the country for steel and bring back those jobs and using our own natural resources rather than shipping them somewhere else to create jobs somewhere else. So, but the end, the bottom line is there will be more expense to the end user. It means price of cars will go up, appliances, anything that uses steel.
If the purchase occurs.
That's correct. Well, that's the point. Is my income's not going up, but the cost of the goods are going up. So now I have to make choices. So am I buying a new car this year, or am I going to go to the clothing store and buy clothes? The clothes may have gone up if there are certain tariffs on products such as, you know, cotton.
Textiles, yeah.
Right. and all those synthetics that dye, you know, so that you can wear the stuff that you wear.
Hey,
all those
disco,
polyesters.
You disco's know many, coming back, baby.
How many polyesters died?
It's been a rough year for the rayon factory the rayon farm.
I'm kidding, but you're absolutely correct. People have to make a decision now. Am I going to do this or am I going to do that? I was joking around with somebody just the other day, and we were talking about, you know, where is he going to buy this or A or B? And somebody goes, why choose?
Buy both.
The point being is that as prices go up, we have to make more choices. And sometimes it won't be A or B. It's whether we're going to do A or B at all.
Yeah, it's a yes, no, rather than what
exactly.
Flavor.
Exactly. And so, you know, anytime that we're trying to, you know, bring in tariffs and these trade wars and so forth, you're looking at increasing the cost of the consumer. And the problem is that we've gotten so used to really cheap Chinese stuff that it's going to be hard for us to go back to paying full fare for stuff.
Now, there are also consumer trends, I would suspect, that influence forecasting as well. Amazon, Google, that whole, the virtual side of things. Well, again, there are those that are impacted by it, and there are those that are not impacted mm-hmm. by it. You know, if you're a restaurant, odds are nobody's going to go order a Big Mac from Amazon. It might happen. I don't know. But I wouldn't think that that would make a lot of sense, or, you know, steaks or in any kind of prepared food. Now, if I'm a grocery store, different ballgame. How do you project something or forecast something that is this dynamic and there really isn't a reference point for it because it didn't exist 10 years ago?
You have to really look at your industry and see where the trends are going because technology is evolving so quickly that it really is impacting consumer behavior very, very quickly. You mentioned Amazon, where now it is, if I'm looking for something especially that's unique or I want precisely what I want, you know, I can spend a few moments on the internet or I can drive around for a few hours trying to see if I can find exactly what I want. Now, that has changed the retail end of everything substantially. We're also seeing the same things in the finance industry in that, you know, they call it fintech companies that provide finance, financial options for people on the internet in mass quantities. Now, the challenge is there is you don't have any direct interaction with a human being, and it's also more expensive right now to go fintech than it is to go in the conventional way. But that's going to change someday. So I think every industry, not only ours, yours, retail, is going to evolve with technology. And the question that you have to ask yourself is, you know, how do I evolve with it?
And what time frame, too.
Exactly. And so, which brings up an interesting, when I was my first position as a CEO of a bank, there had just started the first two internet-only banks in the country. Wingspan was one of them, and I forgot the other one. And that was going to be the trend moving forward to a large degree. And so there was, you know, brick and mortar was going to go away. And so I did a great deal of research. And so maybe after the break, I'll tell you about how that research ended up.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We are back to Talk Shop this morning with the bank dude, John Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, American Ag Credit, and Lolita Cheese. John, before the break, you were talking about fintech or financial services available through the internet. I was playing with my buddy. Actually, I was kind of gloating, which probably isn't the best thing to do. But my buddy who has an affiliated station with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the recent developments in the NBA with his team and the recent developments with my team.
Right.
And he said, you know, a lot of people don't like Dan Gilbert because he's so rich. Rocket Loan and Quicken Loan are his companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, interesting. Okay. Set that aside, but what you're talking about, an industry that has got these major providers that didn't exist 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is their impact? I mean, remember the Home Shopping Network was so novel 25 years ago, right?
Right.
And now Paxson and his, listen to me like I know what I'm talking about, huh? Bud Paxson and his model now are almost passé to a certain extent, you know, relegated to Ronco,
mm-hmm,
rather than something different. How do you forecast those types of things, either in your industry or specifically, or in industries that are impacted by these changes in the consumer marketplace?
Yeah. So to answer your question, I'll complete my story from the last segment. And in that, I'd just taken over as CEO of a bank, and two internet financial institutions had been started, and the whole buzz in the industry was brick and mortar is over. Everybody's going to be doing banking on internet. You know, get rid of your branches and go electronic.
Staff down.
Exactly.
Et cetera. Yeah.
And so I started doing a great deal of research, and I finally ended up, and I was very frustrated because I wasn't really finding the answers I wanted. And at that point, Wells Fargo was the absolute leader in online technologies. As far as banks go. And so I listened to a speaker from Wells Fargo, and one of the things she said is that, you know, they were the number one leader in online banking at the time. It just started, and et cetera, et cetera. But then she gave this statistic, is that of the people that were banking online, 90% of the time when they wanted a new product, they came into the branch.
So it was information retrieval service.
So people wanted to use the technology, but when they were looking for a new service, they wanted interface with a human being to determine that they were in the right product and that it was set up correctly.
Ever tried to buy shoes on the internet?
Yes.
Successful or not?
Depends.
Not depends. That's a whole different topic.
There you go.
Yeah. The most frustrating experience I've had is trying to buy shoes on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I've given up. It just got to be there.
Once you find the shoe that you want, you can reorder the same shoe. That's successful. But other than that, you just got to figure, I'm going to get them and I'm going to send them back. And then once after 10 or 12 times, I'll get the one I want. But with that said, so you know, that's what you have to look at.
Things are evolving.
Right.
Yeah.
Is yes, technology is coming, it's here, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that is your selling proposition. And so let me back up there. I sell financial goods and services at Redwood Capital Bank. Our products are very generic. They're commodities. Checking accounts, doesn't matter where you go, they work relatively the same. Savings accounts, loans, home loans, you know, all of those things, wherever you go, are relatively the same. So what is your selling proposition? And for us, it's service. And that's why, you know, we go the extra mile to provide service that other institutions are not either can't or are unwilling to do. So for instance, if you call our general number, a human being at the branch you called answers the phone. There's no phone trees, there's no voicemail. If you call my direct number, you could get a voicemail, but if you call the general number, a human being's gonna answer. If you walk in to make a deposit, our goal is that you have a zero wait in line. And so other institutions, 5 minutes, 10-minute wait in line is considered acceptable. For us, 5 or 10 seconds is not. And so
different standards.
Exactly. So we set the bar much higher. And the reason we do that is because that's what we sell. We sell service.
Now, is that customer driven or is that an internal standard?
Well, we set the standard. And there's a whole other concept in marketing services that we could go into. And maybe someday we will, in that what consumer expectations are, because they have
right.
They have their minimum expectations, they have their desires. Two sets every time you walk into a business.
So then as you're trying to develop a forecast based on service standards, internal expectations, internal standards, obviously that's connected to the marketplace also, because they gotta be. How do you develop a forecast? Do you zero base it each year? Or do you say, okay, we did X last year, we're anticipating X plus or X minus, and then adjust into the budget?
Where you start your budget's really, really important.
Ah,
and there's many ways
to
do it.
It's a tease for the commercial. All right, we'll get the really, really, really important stuff instead of what we've talked about so far when we come back.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with John Dalby. John, before the break, you said that's really, really, really important. And then we went to break.
It was really, really important that we went to break.
Yeah. And we were talking about forecasting and...
We were talking about budgets.
To figure out from the forecast and the budget what comes mm-hmm. first and what's the order and what's the key component to it. And I said zero-based rollover as the choices with the budget.
So you have a number of ways to budget and what's your starting point. So zero means you start from scratch and you create your budget each year from zero. And, you know, I start with sales projections, then I start adding my expenses and so forth. And that is probably the ultimate strategic plan-driven budget you can have. The next best is to start with last year's results. Where did we actually go? And that should, regardless of how you start, that should be a factor in what you're budgeting for. Because if you saw, you know, I might have budgeted last year for, you know, $800,000 in labor, and I ended up $950,000. Well, if I used last year's budget to start with at $800,000, it's a worthless number, right?
Yeah.
And if I start from zero and I put in $700,000, well, it means I've got to cut out $250,000 worth of expense, plus I've got, you know, wage increases to compensate for. So my point being is, you could start from zero, you can start from last year's actual results, or you can start from last year's budget. And which to me is the worst way to do it, because it's neither strategic nor it's based on the reality of what happened last year.
So let's use our analogy there for this business with payroll or personnel cost, labor cost, 750 or 850, 900, and you projected 750
right.
going in. Okay, so there was what, a deviation of 20%, give or
roughly,
take?
Roughly, yeah.
Okay, so when you come up off of the 950 or the 900,000, do you build in a deviation of another 20% because you don't know, you know, the fudge factor? Or do you reset it down 10% because there was a lot of overtime in there, but you make allowances for recognition that it could be a little bit higher?
A 20% increase in an expense category, and we're using labor, the first question you ask is why? So how much of that 20% increase was actually increase in wages? You know, so did you give a 5% increase, you know, on average to everyone, et cetera, et cetera? So how much of that was wage increase? How much was overtime? How much was additional staffing? And was it additional staffing because it had abnormal sales? And will those sales continue? Will I need to produce as many next year as I did last year?
So you just can't look at it as a blank
figure. Exactly.
So
just taking a number and adding a percentage doesn't make sense. Every number you have to look at and says, you have to say to yourself, okay, what happened last year? Is that going to reoccur? And what is my strategic plan? And what are my forecasted sales? So if I forecast 25% less sales next year, I probably don't need to produce as much product. Therefore, I need, you know, to budget differently.
Now, how different is that? And I know we're kind of astray here, but we don't have too much time anyway, so we can't get too far off. If you're a nonprofit, I'm thinking the fire departments, okay? They can't really forecast fires. They know historical trends. But the last couple of years have been kind of rough. This year isn't starting out to be the smoothest thing either. Overtime, additional labor. Yeah, it's all there, but and they don't have additional sales.
Yeah. So governmental budgeting is a whole different animal from the private sector in that you're dealing with tax revenues and so forth and politics and there's a lot of issues there.
Different marketplace.
Exactly. And so that sort of budgeting is much different.
And perhaps that's setting up for a future show also. Thanks for coming by.
Good to be here.
Enjoy your summer. Yeah, we'll see each other before it's over, I know. See everybody tomorrow.